Welcome back to season 3 of Snubs and Dubs. We've been talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how's it going?
Kyle, it's going pretty good.
I got no complaints, really, at the end of the day. The key issue here, nothing to complain about.
Perfect.
How about you?
Yeah, I have nothing to complain about either. It's a little bit of a holiday. You know, it's an odd holiday because it is like a kind of a sad holiday, but also a holiday nonetheless. So
I mean, I worked, but I did that so I could boot my free day down to a happier holiday time. So really, that was a good trade-off.
It all works out. Did you watch anything else in the last week? I know this was kind of like a substantial film to fit into the week, so I wouldn't blame you if you didn't, but did you?
Well, only something that you and I watched together.
Sure did.
It was The Banshees of Inisherin?
Yes.
I want to say, because I looked it up seconds ago, and I don't know how I feel. It's a good movie. It's weird.
Yeah, it is
weird. But yeah, I don't know. I did enjoy it. It's weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very well made. It's a beautiful movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if the story's incredibly compelling. It gets you there, though.
It does. It is an odd movie because it is well-written, well-acted, well-shot, well-put-together movie. But the concept is so odd. And I thought that the initial concept of one man not wanting to be friends with another anymore was kind of going to go into a different direction, maybe a different reason. Maybe like he was ill and he just didn't want to like hurt his friend too much. But no. It was just a man who was feeling like he was wasting his life away talking to this guy.
Yeah.
And so he decided not to be friends. And that was the whole movie.
That was everything.
Granted, it escalates.
Obviously.
But the concept of that is the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so on a macro level, it's kind of compelling and like a little bit of an accomplishment. Like such an obscure topic could warrant a whole movie that is giving great performances and is getting like awards talk. But like still it's so odd. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what box office poll that it has.
Oh yeah, I don't think that's what its concern is.
No, absolutely not, which is why I'm so curious to see what it is.
I mean, I'm sure we'll hear more about it at the end of the year. I think it's gonna get some acting nominations, probably from Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. I could see an original screenplay nominee.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if it got one.
Especially since the writer-director has had original screenplay nominees before. Most recently, I think it was 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. So he's kind of in the Academy's pocket there. So I don't know. He'll probably see it at the Academy Awards, but yeah.
Yeah, this is one that I would not be shocked to see nominations, but I would be surprised to see many wins, if any, in all honesty.
Me too, especially, I don't know if you kind of have an ear to the ground at all, but like there's other people in these positions of like acting and writing so far that seem like they're kind of locked in.
Mm-hmm.
Like Brendan Fraser for The Whale has kind of felt like the person that is going to win Best Actor.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We got to see that movie. Yeah,
exactly. But it was something. Have you watched anything else, Kyle?
Sure did. I watched two other things, both new movies. The first one I watched was Weird, the Al Yankovic Story.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's the Weird Al biopic and big air quotes biopic because it's not a biopic in the sense that it's actually following his life.
No.
In Weird Al fashion, and Weird Al was a writer on this movie, it is a parody of a musical biopic with like the concept of Weird Al's life. Like, I think there's sprinkles of actual events in Weird Al's life, but for the most part, it is a hard parody of every musical biopic that you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it goes through the beats in the same way that you would expect from a musical biopic, like their troubled past, their parents having like a hard time accepting who they are, and then the troubled phase, bad influences, drugs, alcohol, big traumatic moment where they're like going to the hospital or some shit, and then the eventual like awards and coming to their own and living a good life at the end. But like a lot of this didn't happen. It is just like Weird Al taking the piss. And I think knowledge of Weird Al in background will kind of help you enjoy this movie a little bit more because he's like the most squeaky clean person in music.
Like, I was trying to think, like, what do you mean? First of all, his parents had to accept him as like what, kind of a funny guy.
Yeah.
And like his hard times of, I don't know, he was a silly guy.
Okay. Yeah. So like they kind of make it like accordions and polka parties are like good things. He's not like a drug and alcohol person in reality, but no. They make him seem like this guy who was fucking like just nose to the pile of cocaine and swinging back alcohol 24/7. Daniel Radcliffe does such a good job portraying that and kind of embracing the comedy of that. It's really good. I had like a good time with it, but I wouldn't say it's like the best movie ever.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if you didn't know what it was, you might not like it because it does feel so cliche. Mm-hmm. But if you know that that's making fun of the cliches, you can kind of get over that and start having fun with it. And it does get kind of absurd, but it was fun overall. And so I would recommend it. It's like free if you have a Roku device or Roku channel.
Oh, I have one of those.
Yeah. And it just has ads in your space. Yeah, so whatever. It's not the biggest deal, but yeah. And Evan Rachel Wood as Madonna was so funny as well. I liked it. The other thing that I watched was on Wednesday night, I went and saw Tar, mm-hmm. which was Todd Field's new movie. We recently talked about Todd Field's In the Bedroom this season.
Yeah, yeah. That was this season. Wow,
that feels like a while away. It wasn't
even that long ago. Yeah, I think that was only like 6 or 7 episodes ago.
Odd. And the more I think about it, and I was even talking to my mom about it today, the more I kind of like it as like a whole. But while I was there, it is a 2.5 hour long movie about a composer conductor who's kind of falling apart. And so it does feel long at times.
That sounds long.
Yeah. I could see the In the Bedroom of it all too, because like it was kind of slow, very dramatic, but the character itself and Cate Blanchett is amazing. She's a very complicated character because she's not perfect in any way. Like she's obviously amazingly artistic and she's kind of an auteur and is very revered, but she's also like a very troubled person and she has some like troubled past and troubled activity that's is coming up, but they don't necessarily tell you that so expositorially. Is that a word? I don't know.
Yeah, like, sure. Yeah. I like it.
There's weird because like it has elements, like especially at the start, they do this interview with like a New York Times reporter or something that's in front of like a crowd and it's a big exposition dump. So you get kind of the background of this character, but as you go through, you are starting to learn elements of her past, but it doesn't like necessarily give you all the information. It kind of just like shows you things here and there and how maybe some of her decisions in the past have kind of led her to be in this position now where she's having sort of emotional and career deterioration.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to watch. It's fascinating to talk about. And it's funny because I was watching a review of it by Chris Nuckman, who's like a really good YouTube reviewer. And he said something that I really liked, which was that it felt like a real biopic. Like of a person that actually existed, because it's like things are happening and they feel like they're happening to a real person and like these would happen in real life, but it's not a real person. It's a fictional character, but it just feels like so real in its like portrayal of this type of person that if nobody told you that this was just a work of fiction, you could probably convince somebody that it is based on a real person.
Yeah. So this is the anti-weird.
Yes,
this is the exact opposite.
It is like it feels like a biopic, even though it's not.
Yeah. So, which I think we should create the category biofic.
See? That's cool.
Yeah. I'm going to pitch that to all the directors, right? I'm going to send an email right now. Yeah. You keep going.
Keep an eye out on Cate Blanchett at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I feel like her next competition is going to be Margot Robbie in Babylon, which has yet to be seen until December. But I do feel like she's kind of a front runner right now because she was amazing. Like the levels of this character, and like she had some moments that were very reserved, but also she was allowed to have those bigger moments. I liked it, but the trouble was sitting through it.
Yeah. That sounds like a long movie. Yeah,
that was it. Well, interesting. Except for this movie, of course, season 3 of Snubs and Dubs, covering the films from the year 2001. And so for episode 15, we are talking about The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. Now, we've both seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time you watched it?
Oh, the last time I watched it was probably 2012, 2013 kind of area around in there. So somewhat recently. And I watched it in a marathon kind of setting. Well, not like a marathon, but I watched all three movies probably within a week.
Right.
So not quite a marathon, but all in close succession. So I find when you do that, the distinct endpoints and start points of different movies don't always stick. So I kind of forgot where this one ended, but does end on a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time you saw this bad boy?
I honestly can't remember. I think it was the days of like DVD. Like it's been a while since I've seen it. I had a Blu-ray copy before I upgraded it to the new 4K release that they had. And I don't think I ever watched that Blu-ray copy. Hmm. The other thing that I'll expose myself by saying is I've never seen the extended editions.
I don't think I have either, but yeah. Like, I don't even think that's a, we only have so much time
yeah.
in our hands in True. A day. Life passes you by pretty fast.
Yeah.
So you probably can't watch every extended director's cut of every movie, yeah. especially for ones that are already really long.
Totally. And like the extended cuts are like over 4 hours. Like, and
that's,
so
that's an event.
I like Lord of the Rings, but yeah. I mean, clearly I don't love it in the, I mean, I do love it. It's great. It's a great series, mm-hmm. but like, I'm not so fond of it that I would want to go sit down and watch a, like a, what, 12-hour marathon of it? That's too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. I will caveat that I would love to do that at some point, but yes. like that is an event that will require planning. I'm going to have to carve totally. Out a section of schedule.
Yeah.
Next time that I have like to burn some vacation time, I might just take, if I take like a week off or something, mm-hmm. I'll probably watch one extended cut a day just because now I'm yeah. actually really curious to watch the extended cuts.
Me too. I am actually curious because I don't know how much more they could add that would add so much more value to it, but I am curious as to what that is and why people are so, I guess, adamant on watching the extended editions. Because whenever people, at least that I talk to, talk about Lord of the Rings when they're watching it, have watched the extended editions.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I may have missed that in some capacity. I mean, in the largest capacity because I haven't watched them at all.
Yeah.
But like, I just don't know why they are so crucial to the Lord of the Rings experience. But yeah.
If I had to guess, I would say it's because these movies are so goddamn good. So yeah. only having more of a really, really good movie.
True.
Probably a really fun thing. Mm-hmm. But that's my guess.
Yeah, true. Should we get into it?
Let's hop right in.
All right. If you were interested in the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, or the book it's based on, I've included the links of the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, so if you haven't seen this movie yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes, so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it.
The Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, is a 2001 epic fantasy adventure film directed by Peter Jackson and written by Peter Jackson, Fran Walsh, Philippa Boyens, and J.R.R. Tolkien. This is based on a little known novel series that really blew up afterwards that no one had heard of before. It's based on The Lord of the Rings, if you guessed at home, by J.R.R. Tolkien. This is starring Elijah Wood as Frodo, Ian McKellen as Gandalf, Viggo Mortensen as Aragorn, Sean Austin as Samwise Gamgee, Kate Blanchett as Galadriel, John Rhys-Davies as Gimli, Billy Boyd as Peregrine Took, Dominic Monaghan as Meriadoc Brandybuck, Orlando Bloom as Legolas, Sean Bean as Boromir, Christopher Lee as Saruman, and I'm cutting it off there. There's 10,000 other characters, all of whom receive substantial screen time, yeah. but I can't do it all. This has a runtime of 178 minutes. This was released on December 19, 2001. Kyle, hit me with it. What did you think of The Lord of the Rings Fellowship of that Ring?
Oh, God, it's such a good movie.
Yeah.
And it's obviously the best thing that I've seen so far from this year.
Oh, easily.
Like, obviously, a little bit of spoilers for our later rankings. It is clearly the yeah. best thing that I've seen up to this point. That being said, I don't think I loved it as much as maybe I was expecting to love it. Because it does feel long at parts. And at other parts, like it doesn't come together in the same, like when I'm looking at it as a complete package itself, the whole movie, just this one.
Yeah.
I feel like it didn't leave me as satisfied as I wanted to, but that is just like minorly. I still loved being in the world and watching the movie, but yeah, there was like a little twinge of like eh.
Mm-hmm.
Eh.
Now, question for you, not in like an elitist kind of way, but right. have you read the book series?
No.
And I think what might color our perceptions is like, I've read the book series yes. a number of times.
Right.
I'm a loser. I'm absolute human garbage. I think there was like a 6 or 7 year period where I read the books, like that trilogy, 4 or 5 times.
Right.
I would just do like an annual reread of it and some other ones. So watching it, I think we're coming from the perspective of like, there's so much more that's not in the movies, but in the books.
Right.
So I know that this is like a summary of events, which made it easier to tie things together. Cause I'm like, oh, well, I know like that's not actually what happened between like the city of Bree and them getting to Rivendell. Like there's so much more that actually goes on.
Right.
Like, oh, actually it took a while for them to get to Bree. Like I know what happened there. Mm. So if you're trying to watch this and expect like, and you're watching that as the experience of this movie's the full narrative.
Right.
it's probably not as strong because it does skip out a bunch. And like, I recognize where it ties things over. And like, I know there's fun, cool stuff that happens, but I get why it's not in here. It's already like three hours long. Like, you don't need to do that. So it's a different, but I totally agree. When every movie I've watched up to this point, I've put on rankings that, man, Fellowship of the Ring is going to fucking wipe the floor with this movie. Like, Donnie Darko, number one for so long. Yeah. Like, sit down, son. I'm sorry. You didn't stand a chance against Frodo Baggins, okay?
Absolutely not, no. Yeah. And it's like super easy. But then at the same time, like, I don't know. It's possible that if there's like a really great movie that I haven't seen before in this year, it could take it.
Yeah.
And obviously, as we know, this didn't win Best Picture this year.
Yeah.
And so there is something that could possibly be better. This movie was so good. And it's clearly so well crafted. There's so much going on. Special effects, makeup, like the fact that they got this movie to look as good as it was and still function as a whole movie, even with how long it was.
Mm-hmm.
And even behind the scenes stuff with fucking gross Harvey Weinstein wanting two movies instead of three to cover the whole trilogy. Like,
it never ends with this guy.
And so, yeah, the fact that this is so good is mind-blowing, but something else won, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is a shift in our season of 2001, because we've spent the first movies going like, I remember that movie, like, I haven't seen them before, it's pretty good. We are now going into the territory of, how did Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, not win? This is now an investigation, a case study in what happened here. How did we get to the point where this was only a nominee? So every movie along the way that also didn't win is like a potential, like, oh, this could be something we haven't heard about before. That's fun. But all it is from here on in is us getting to the movie that won and then figuring out what went wrong. Or even if not something went wrong, how did this come in and scoop us? Because I didn't watch the movie that won Best Picture. So I'm unaware of that movie. And this is going to be a fun matchup because goddamn, this movie rocks.
And this was one of the key points of interest for me, even like considering this season to be about 2001. Because, you know, you got so many franchise starters, Harry Potter, Ocean's 11, Shrek, and then this one being such a major one. It was so interesting to think that this was such a big movie and it didn't win. And then, you know, it's such a beloved franchise. And obviously the Rings of Power just came out. So there's still love for this franchise and obviously the Hobbit movies later, but you know, those aren't as important anyways.
Yeah.
So like, it's such an interesting thing to look at this movie in particular, as you said. So yeah. What do you want to get into plot?
Let's hop into plot.
All right. I'm going to read straight through this lengthy plot. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. In the Second Age of Middle-earth, the lords of elves, dwarves, and men are given rings of power. Unbeknownst to them, the Dark Lord Sauron forges the One Ring in Mount Doom, instilling into it a great part of his power to dominate the other rings so that he might conquer Middle-earth. A final allegiance of men and elves battles Sauron's forces in Mordor. Incidol of Gondor severs Sauron's finger and the ring with it, thereby vanquishing Sauron and returning him to spirit form. With Sauron's first defeat, the Third Age of Middle-earth begins. The ring's influence corrupts Isildur, who takes it for himself and is later killed by orcs. The ring is lost in a river for 2,500 years until it is found by Gollum, who owns it for over 4.5 centuries. The ring abandons Gollum and is subsequently found by a hobbit named Bilbo Baggins, who is unaware of its history. 60 years later, Bilbo celebrates his 111th birthday in the Shire, reuniting with his old friend, the wizard Gandalf the Grey. Bilbo departs the Shire for one last adventure, and he leaves his inheritance, including the ring, to his nephew Frodo. Gandalf investigates the ring, discovers its true nature, and learns that Gollum was captured and tortured by Sauron's orcs, revealing two words during his interrogation, Shire and Baggins. Gandalf returns and warns Frodo to leave the Shire. As Frodo departs with his friend, gardener Samwise Gamgee, Gandalf rides to Isengard to meet with the wizard Saruman, but discovers Saruman's alliance with Sauron, who has dispatched his undead Nazgul servants to find Frodo. Frodo and Sam are joined by fellow hobbits Merry and Pippin, and they evade the Nazgul before arriving in Bree, where they are meant to meet Gandalf. However, Gandalf never arrives, having been taken prisoner by Saruman. The hobbits are then aided by a ranger named Strider, who promises to escort them to Rivendell. However, they are ambushed by the Nazgul on Weathertop, and their leader, the Witch King, stabs Frodo with a Morgul blade. Arwen, an elf and Strider's beloved, locates Strider and rescues Frodo, summoning floodwaters that sweep the Nazgul away. She takes him to Rivendell, where he is healed by the elves. Frodo meets with Gandalf, who escaped Isengard on a great eagle. That night, Strider reunites with Arwen and they affirm their love for each other. Facing the threat of both Sauron and Saruman, Arwen's father, Lord Elrond, decides against keeping the ring in Rivendell. He holds a council of elves, men, and dwarves, also attended by Frodo and Gandalf, that decide the ring must be destroyed in the fires of Mount Doom. Frodo volunteers to take the ring, accompanied by Gandalf, Sam, Merry, Pippin, Elf Legolas, Dwarf Gimli, Boromir of Gondor, and Strider, who is actually Aragorn, Isildur's heir and the rightful king of Gondor. Bilbo, now living in Rivendell, gives Frodo his sword Sting and a chainmail shirt made of Mithril. The Fellowship of the Ring makes for the Gap of Rohan, but is discovered it is being watched by Saruman's spies. They instead set off over the mountain pass of Cardross, but Saruman summons a storm that forces them to travel through the mines of Moria. After finding the dwarves of Moria dead, the Fellowship is attacked by orcs and a cave troll. They hold them off, but are confronted by Durin's Bane, a Balrog residing within the mines. While the others escape, Gandalf fends off the Balrog and casts it into the vast chasm, but Balrog drags Gandalf down into the darkness with him. The devastated Fellowship reaches Lothlorien, ruled by the Elf Queen Galadriel, who privately informs Frodo that only he can complete the quest and that one of his friends in the Fellowship will try to take the ring. Meanwhile, Saruman creates an army of Uruk-hai in Isengard to find and kill the Fellowship. The Fellowship travels by river to Parth Gallant. Frodo wanders off and is confronted by Boromir, who tries to take the ring as Lady Galadriel had predicted. Uruk-hai scouts then ambush the Fellowship. Their leader, Lurtz, mortally wounds Boromir as he fails to stop them from taking Merry and Pippin as prisoners. Aragorn arrives and kills Lurtz before comforting Boromir as he dies, promising to help the people of Gondor in their coming conflict. Fearing the ring will corrupt his friends, Frodo decides to travel to Mordor alone, but allows Sam to come along, recalling his promise to Gandalf to look after him. As Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli set out to rescue Merry and Pippin, Frodo and Sam make their way down the mountain pass of Emmon-Mule, journeying on to Mordor. But that's The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring.
I have an issue. I got a bone to pick right off the top with the movie.
Right.
In the opening summary where it goes like into like, oh, here's the ring, here's what happened, and there's Bilbo. They say a line that says, the ring came to the creature Gollum. And my issue with that is that's horseshit. The ring did not go to the creature Gollum. It fell into the hands of a hobbit named Sméagol, who became Gollum, which is its own story.
Yes.
So when there's a quick scene of Gollum picking up the ring and going like, my precious, for the first time, no, that's garbage. That didn't happen. That's revisionist absolute bollocks. I want the movie to, I know they get into it because eventually they got to go over the story of how Gollum became the demented little creature that he is. But just to kick it off like that, when only one or two more lines is needed to correct that confusion and say, it was found by the hobbit Sméagol, who was corrupted to become this little gross guy who's always wet. That's one line and you can fix that. So come on, Peter Jackson, that's Peter Whack, son.
Yeah, I think they might have wanted to save that reveal, though, because it is kind of, in a sense, a reveal that he was a hobbit.
Yeah.
Because hobbits were otherwise not very important to the whole kind of like history of the ring. Mm-hmm. If you look at it.
Well, I mean, like, other than Bilbo Baggins finding the ring. Whatever.
Before that.
Yeah.
I mean, and so Sméagol being Gollum and him, Sméagol being a hobbit, is kind of like a reveal. But then, yeah, you're kind of right, because they are going to get through that story. And obviously, The Hobbit was written before The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And obviously, Peter Jackson was a big fan of the whole series, I'm sure. So I'm sure he read The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
And knew the history of that. So it is kind of interesting that there is that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Him probably full knowing that they have three movies to go through this and that they'll maybe get to The Hobbit eventually, which they did.
But yeah.
It was many years later. So
regrettably, they did get to The Hobbit. So I feel like a lot of our analysis is going to be this shit kicked ass.
Yeah.
What were some things, in your opinion, that didn't necessarily kick as much ass?
Sometimes the action scenes are not filmed in the best way, especially the scene of Gandalf versus Saruman.
It's a little wonky.
Have you ever seen those TikToks of that guy who's dressed up as two different characters, but he's just throwing himself against the wall a bunch of times?
Yeah.
Oh, that reminded me of that, because it is literally just cutting to Gandalf being thrown across and then cutting to the Saruman being thrown across and just back and forth. And like, it was just kind of comical.
Yeah. So it also pulls in question, like, what level of magic do these massive sorcerers who've been around for millennia possess that all they can do is kind of push each other from a distance? Like, do they have nothing else within their range of magic than like, this is my mortal enemy. I got to shove them.
And the little bit of Gandalf just spinning from
I'm glad people just memed the hell out of that afterwards, because it's kind of janky. Yeah.
And I think that it's opted for the kind of Bourne ultimatum type action cutting, where sometimes it was like really shaky and then it would be cutting really fast between stuff, where sometimes I just wanted to see what was happening. Mm-hmm. And in that way, I think that this is where the movie kind of falls short, because it is such high fantasy and there is a lot of action and you do want to see it, that when it's kind of filmed in this sort of chaotic way, that for me at least, it felt a little bit not how I wanted to see it.
But yeah,
that's just one gripe. What about you?
I would agree with the action scenes. There's a couple times, and I feel like it's an issue with any time that movies want to have like, here's an army of 10,000 people against one good guy, where every combat scene is like, the bad guy just kind of runs at you and poorly swings nowhere near you, and then he's taken care of in a quick one shot. Even just like a one kick to the leg and this guy's now mortally wounded and can't battle anymore, where it just looks silly. I prefer when they have like one-on-one fights where it's actually like there's cool choreography to it. It's not just like, I charge at you. I got punched. That's the end of old Orc Joe over here. Especially, and it was the worst, in my opinion, when the Uruk-hai finally catch up to the group when they just made it to the banks after like canoeing down from that second elf area.
Yeah.
And like, these are supposed to be elite. They have been raised out of the mud for the sole purpose of kicking ass and stealing hobbits. And then it's just, they fight as good as another orc does.
Yeah.
Like, what they should have done is just found a way to trim down the amount of people who are there fighting. Have like, because I don't remember how it's happened in the books, but just in the movies, I don't care. Have like an advanced party of 10 guys, of 10 super good soldiers come and fight. That's going to be the same, but it's not going to have as jank choreography as it is when it's like 1,000 guys versus like Boromir swinging one sword.
Yeah, or even like Aragorn trying to like fight off a group of guys. I found that those shots were kind of like, it looked like they were waiting.
Yeah, it looks like a rap battle where there's like 13 hype men all around the two guys fighting, going like, ooh, oh, but they're all supposed to be trying to kill him. So why are they just watching?
I don't know. It's like one of those things that happens in a bunch of these war movies when there's supposed to be like one central action hero who is like fighting in a group of people, but like a bunch of people just surrounding them and waiting to have their turn. Like, this isn't Pokemon, guys.
Yeah.
You don't need to have turn-based combat. You can all swarm him and stab him at the same time. But yeah, so it's kind of weird in that regard.
Yeah, I would say the second thing that I want to address about this movie is Elijah Wood.
Yeah, okay, I was going to get there too.
Because he's not great, and I don't know if it's the him or if it's the direction or both. And I have to think there's at least an emphasis on how the director wanted him to act.
Right.
Because a lot of the shots of him getting injured are just kind of silly.
Yeah.
Like, they keep doing a slow-mo of him shaking around looking sad. And like, by the seventh time they're doing it, you're kind of done with it. And like, we have 180 minutes here, folks. We can't spend 20 of them slow-mo looking at Frodo bleeding. It's not entertaining after a while.
Yeah, totally. I think some of the acting is a little bit spotty sometimes. Yeah. Like, and that could just be on direction too, where they're going big in a sense, but like, it doesn't feel earned.
Mm-hmm.
And so, especially when you have such masterclass actors like Ian McKellen and Christopher Lee, their scenes together where they're not spinning around and being thrown against the wall are phenomenal, because those two are fucking legends.
Yeah.
And it's especially obvious when you have scenes of Frodo and Ian Holm, who is Bilbo, and also Frodo and Ian McKellen, because they're just so good. And he's just like, I don't know, he might have been mostly unknown at this point.
He'd been in a few things.
Like, I think The Faculty was before this. It might have been in the same time period, but this was his big break for sure. Mm-hmm. And so the experience level was showing.
Especially came through, because I had forgotten about this line. It's been heavily memed on afterwards, but like his, fine then, keep your secrets. I forgot the delivery of that line sucks because it's just so fast and it's not, it doesn't make any sense. Where he's like, I think Bilbo's up to something. And then Gandalf doesn't speak for all of about 0.25 seconds. And he goes, fine, then keep your secrets. It's just so fast getting through all that.
Yeah.
But he just has like this court jesterin kind of like character that doesn't really fit with like either the book character or fit well within the movie. So right. That is my biggest gripe, but it's unfortunately the main character so far. And he gets better. Mm. I know it gets better. It's just that at the start, before he's gone on the grand adventure, he's just kind of like a silly boy and not really like a huge protagonist whose emotional journey is going to move you with him.
I will also say, not enough Liv Tyler.
Oh, there's never enough.
I mean, like, she is glowing, literally glowing in this literally. Movie. And I think it was perfectly personified how everyone sees Liv Tyler. So perfect. But not enough. And not also enough. Hugo Weaving. Fucking love that guy.
I know. He's so good. Yeah. But I mean, really... And I mean, really, beyond those gripes, this movie kicks so much ass.
Oh my God.
The fuck, the score is so good.
Yes.
Everything, the cinematography is so good.
Yeah, it is.
The costumes, the makeup, everything about this movie is incredible. Yeah. And I don't even know what other things I even like particularly specifically want to go over.
Yeah. You have to come in this movie because this was probably in that era where CGI was getting good enough that you could use it. And an easy comparison is Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Because they also had great grand locations for like Hogwarts and Hogsmeade and Hagrid's Hut and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. But they do have enough CGI in there with like the brooms flying and whatever. But a lot of this feels and has felt this way since it came out so real because of how much they did practically in terms of shooting on location in New Zealand and also the special effects makeup that they did. Obviously, when there's a huge mountain of orcs, they're not all real, but the close-ups of the orcs are so good.
Yeah.
Because that's just real makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that movie for that. And it's like another contrast to the Hobbit movies, where I don't know if you've seen that clip where like Ian McKellen like breaks down on the set.
It looks ridiculous.
Because he's literally just in a green box.
Yeah. But they've also like green screened 100 different items into there instead of just like having the items there. Like, it's terrible.
It is terrible. And so I have so much respect for this movie for just like making these choices to make it as real as possible and do as much as they could in camera. And in addition to the obvious CG stuff like the Balrog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which I don't know what your experience was because you watched it on streaming.
Mm-hmm.
But as somebody who watched it at home on the new 4K, I know that they did restorative work on the CGI. So I don't know how much of that looks so good because it was a little bit touched up or if it has held up. So I'm going to stay away from that a little bit because I know that they did some retouching on it.
Yeah.
They didn't do a lot. I don't think they did a lot, but I know that they did some.
Mm-hmm.
So
I will say watching that on streaming, it holds up. But I think they make the Balrog look good with knowing what's in their CGI wheelhouse at this point.
Yeah.
I imagine if they had gone back to recreate the Balrog now, they wouldn't have made it look like that necessarily.
Right.
But they do a really good job with the fire and smoke effect that they don't need to make. Like, I think what works in its favor, there's no fine end point on a lot of its body. So it blends quite well because it just has like either a flame aura or like a gassy effect that you can kind of blend out. So it fits into the environment really well.
Yeah.
But like, honestly, I'm still impressed with the level of CGI that they're able to work into this movie.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of like the one major big bit of CGI.
Yeah.
Which like it kind of earns at that point because it's kind of like a big battle for that. And obviously it's the moment that Gandalf dies. So it's got to be kind of a big climactic moment. So that was a great bit. One thing that I also just came to mind as I was talking about it was I know that in the wides, they used children for the hobbits.
Really?
Did you not know this?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And so when you know this, it becomes so obvious. And like the way that they run, they don't run like Elijah Wood and Sean Astin.
Yeah. Right.
They don't run like those actors would run as adult men. They run like children. So,
I hate that you told me this. I hate this so much.
It's so funny. It's so funny because there'll be moments in like the boats too where it's clearly Viggo Mortensen sitting with two children.
God damn it.
It's so funny. And so like it kind of because I'm sorry for ruining this for you,
it's
but
okay.
It does kind of break the immersion when you do see the lights.
Oh no, I won't be able to think of anything else.
And they do a good job of like having their hoods up or just the backs of their heads so that you don't see it, but also the proportions are wrong.
Yeah, because, like, I'm sure it doesn't look line up at all. Yeah.
Because like in other scenes, like they do a really good job with like the split diopter of the lens and the perspective shift of somebody being closer to the camera than the other person, especially with Gandalf and Frodo in those early scenes. So like that all looks really good and it's worked seamlessly. Like you wouldn't tell if you didn't know, but it's just so funny when you see the children in the scenes and knowing because the proportions are of children and it does kind of look odd, but they were doing the best with what they could and they needed to have some wides. You can't all do it in close. So
they got
to
do that. It's fine. That's just, it's a funny thing like they couldn't have done better anyway. So it's not like a serious criticism. It's just silly.
It is silly and it's fun to know, but, and even with Gimli, like he's shorter than everyone else, but he's about the same, a little bit, maybe a little bit taller than Frodo and Sam.
This is, I think, maybe one of the facts, but he's actually the tallest actor on set at 6'1" or something. So he's probably not taller by a lot, but he is the tallest person there.
Yeah. Cool. Well, did you want to move into reviews and stuff?
Yeah, let's hop into the reviews. Kyle, everyone loves this movie. I'm not going to hide this from you. I'm not going to make you guess. Everyone thought it's amazing. Critics on Rotten Tomato, 91. Audiences saying 91. How about 95?
Damn.
IMDb, that's an 8.8.
Yeah.
Metacritic, 92.
Ooh.
Everyone gets on board with Lord of the Rings.
Totally.
Box office, this made $891.2 million.
Damn.
On a budget of $93 million. Which is high, but also somehow kind of lower than I thought it might be. But
well, yeah, like, it's close enough. That's 2001 as well.
Yeah,
like, once you put inflation on that, that is over $100 million budget for a movie that was an untested franchise at that time. Obviously, the books were popular enough. And with like a relatively unknown director and some unknown cast. But like,
I mean, I would even hazard that it wasn't unknown, but it had been a previously failed property several times over.
Because
a lot of people took different stabs at making Lord of the Rings, and a lot of them were either bad or did poorly and were okay.
Yeah.
So this was like a big chance at trying again to revive it, and goddamn, does it pay off? Because that's your number two at the box office for the year.
Totally.
Only falling behind Harry Potter.
Yep.
But it's time for our rankings, and these, I can only assume, will be scathing. Kyle, what is your enjoyment of Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring?
I give this a 4.5. I don't think it's a perfect 5 because there were some points that I was like, it's a little long.
Yeah.
But I do really enjoy watching this movie. And the fact that I could sit through this entire thing without like really considering how long it was, is just like, it's such a testament to the movie. And it's so much fun.
It is so much fun.
Yeah.
Kyle, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but I'm going to do this. I'm going to give the first ever Snubs and Dubs 4.75. Because like I can't give it a 5. There's there's some things about it, but this movie does so amazingly well around that that I had a great time. Like I had a 5 out of 5 time watching it, but there's just like a couple things that I can't excuse with like it being mostly Elijah Wood, and not necessarily his fault. I'm not pinning that all on Elijah Wood.
Okay,
but he was the epicenter of almost all of it. So 4.75.
Yes.
I'm doing it. I don't care. Kyle, what's your craft ranking here?
This is a 5.
Mm-hmm.
It is so well crafted. And even though there were some points where I did think that the action was a little bit oddly shot, there are so many other elements, score, costumes, the other cinematography, special effects, makeup that make it so well crafted that it's hard to not give it a 5.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Kyle, what's your execution?
This is also a 4.5, also very well executed, especially for a story of this scale. However, there is some weird acting sometimes, so a little touch off.
I'm going to drop it down to a 4 because I felt like the fight scenes should have been a lot better than they were.
True.
They kind of stand out to me as like a failing of this movie. And I feel like a lot of that's just because they tried to go too big with numbers instead of having like a cool choreographed fight scene.
Yeah.
And what is your rewatchability?
This is where I get a 4. I think that it is an easy movie to rewatch when you're up for it.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a movie that is just so easily thrown on. It is kind of a commitment movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you do have to kind of be ready to sit through it. And also maybe even consider the whole trilogy, you know, now that this is kind of in retrospective. Like, if you're starting this, you probably will want to watch the rest of them.
Yeah, it's hard to stop after one.
Like, are you going to watch the rest of them?
I really want. I'm probably going to not continue with the normal series. I want to find a way to watch all three extended cuts, but I really want to keep, like, I want to rewatch the series now and finish it.
Yeah, I'm the same way, especially because I have that new 4K set that has all the extended editions in 4K. They're on two separate discs. That's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's side A, side B. Kind of. This is in vinyl. What are we doing here?
Which is crazy because 4K discs, for those who don't know, are 100 gigabytes of data.
That's insane.
And so
that's mental.
The movies are so big and so fat, and the bit rate is so high, and the quality is beautiful. And so it had to have two discs. Only one disc for the regular edition, but yeah.
I'm going to 4.5. It's pretty much the same thing that you said. I really want to continue the series. I really want to watch the extended cut, but... I can't five it because you need to put in it in your calendar when you're watching these movies. So it's not the perfect throw on at any moment kind of thing.
I do have 2 weeks off at Christmas. I might make some time then.
I'm kind of eyeing up. Oh, but I'm going visiting my girlfriend's family in BC. I don't need to talk to them. I'll just watch these movies. We got some long drives. I'll just watch it while driving, you know?
Perfect, yes.
Yeah, perfectly safe. Kyle, that is going to bring your score to an 18 out of 20 for a 90%, and me an 18.25 out of 20 for a 91%. Mm. Do we need to do the dance? Can I just put this at the top of our ranking?
Yes, put it straight to number one for both of us.
Okay, that saves some time. Kyle, that is going to bring your ranking to Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, Donnie Darko, Memento, Royal Tenenbaums, Shrek, Training Day, Ocean's 11, Harry Potter, Sexy Beast, The Others, Spy Kids, Monsters Ball, Gosford Park, In the Bedroom, Ghost World. And that's going to bring me to Lotter, Donnie Darko, Royal Tenenbaums, Shrek, Training Day, Memento, The Others, Sexy Beast, Harry Potter, Ocean's 11, In the Bedroom, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, Ghost World, Monsters Ball. Ocean's 11th in spot 10 for me right now. Ooh. We only need one more movie. To bump it down, baby.
I think that's possible. Especially knowing what next week is. Yeah.
I'd be shocked if it didn't get bumped down one more time over the next almost till half a season with the best picture winner having yet been reviewed.
Yes.
But that's going to bring us to some Letterboxd reviews. This has a hold on to your pants and both of your socks, if you may. A 4.4 out of 5 on Letterboxd. That's got to be among the best there is.
Yeah.
A titan of industry. The review sucked, though. The problem was there was a lot of it repeating inside jokes. There was one that I liked that did not translate well, but I'm going to say it anyways.
Okay.
Because so it's like, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's ASCII art. You know, when they have like the dashes and like they use all the keyboard characters to make like a person or a face or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone did that and they did like a really like fabulous looking Legolas, I think it is who says it. But they're going under the mountain.
Right.
They're about to get attacked by goblins. Merry had just tossed the bucket down the well. And I think it's Legolas, but I can't remember, looks out the door and goes, they have a cave troll. Like, he just does it so extravagantly. So someone made art of him looking real fabulous and just going, they have a cave troll.
Oh my God. That brings me to the one other point. Fucking Merry and Pippin. Ugh, they just piss me off.
Yeah, they do that.
They're literally just there to ruffle feathers and fuck shit up. They're honestly a nuisance to have around.
Yeah.
Like, just leave them behind. I don't know why they're chasing after them to go save them.
It's fine. They get an arc. They get a whole thing. It's okay. But there's a couple of reviews I do have here. We have Lucy with 4.5 stars. What's better than this? Guys being dudes. In that vein, we have Indy, 5 stars. Sometimes a fellowship is just 6 himbos, 2 daddies, and a gimli. And then lastly, I want to bring some attention to a particular person who goes by Mario on there. Man, you dropped like 5 reviews that were in the top results, and they were all like a couple months apart. I can't even imagine how many times you've watched and commented on this movie to do that. And I just need to tell you that I get it. You are hurt and you're valid. Keep it up and try and watch them even more if you can. Every page had like 2 or 3 of his reviews on it. It was messed up.
Damn.
That's dedication. And his profile picture is Lord of the Rings, of course, but username Mario. So maybe that's just his real first name. Maybe. But I'm kind of surprised he didn't just commit the whole profile to Lord of the Rings. It's his like most reviewed movie. But whatever. That's it for Letterboxd reviews, because we need to get into the awards details.
Right.
And oh boy, is this a beefcake. This has 13 nominations.
Holy fuck.
Just gonna read them out. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, Best Costume Design, Best Film Editing, Best Makeup, Best Original Score, Best Original Song, Best Sound, and Best Visual Effects.
Crazy.
This would go on to win four of them. Again, just gonna list them. Best Cinematography, Best Makeup, Best Original Score, and Best Visual Effects, all of which are deserved. And I don't have a bone to pick with it not getting any of like the acting nominations.
Who was nominated for Supporting Actor?
I don't know why I didn't write that down. Let's find out.
Was it Viggo? Was it?
That's my inclination.
I feel like it's got to be Viggo or Ian McKellen.
It was for Ian McKellen.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. Not going to knock that one bit. In terms of other awards, not bothering. It got a lot, all of them somewhere. It was nominated for, it's got so many, it's got a lot of metal going on.
Yeah. This is like, it's one of those movies that are just so big and they have a lot of below the line awards, like all like the technical awards.
Oh, all of them.
But because it is like so well crafted as a movie and the whole like narratively too, like it does get those like above the line stuff, like actor and picture. And did it get director?
Yes, it did.
Okay, good. Yeah. Unlike fucking Dune, still salty about that, that Dune didn't get director on the first installment.
They better be saving it for Dune 2.
Yeah.
For Tune? Or I'm going to be mad.
Yeah. It's funny how Dune kind of it parallels this movie in a way.
Yeah.
Especially because it's like part one of at least a second part or maybe even a trilogy if they do the other half of the book and then Messiah. I mean, they could go on to do a lot of movies, but I feel like Denis might do three.
Probably.
The second part of the Dune book has to be like, it's the scale of it is going to be huge. And I feel like Denis's got to be nominated. He's got to be.
Another similarity between Dune and Lord of the Rings. Fucking love Dune.
Yeah.
Great movie. So good. I can't wait for the next one. Are you ready for some interesting facts?
Oh, hell yeah.
All right. There were a lot. I tried to pick some that weren't like already everyone knows them because there's so many fun facts about this movie that are in the greater human conscience.
Right.
So I'm going to hit you with some that hopefully have not been heard before. Sir Christopher Lee Saruman read Lord of the Rings once a year until his death in 2015 and had done so since the year it was published.
Damn.
He was also the only member of the cast and crew to have ever met J.R.R. Tolkien.
Right. Didn't he want to be Gandalf?
Yes, okay. I believe so.
Yeah, but then I think it was Peter Jackson that said he would be better for Saruman.
That sounds familiar. Yeah. I remember hearing that. So that's one of the ones I did not look into because I remember hearing that around.
Yeah. I feel like he was part of like, he was always trying to campaign this for being made a movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's cool.
Well, he's such a great Saruman. Yeah. I couldn't imagine him as Gandalf.
I've also seen a clip of him explaining to Peter Jackson what being stabbed in the back would actually be like.
Yeah.
Because like,
Christopher Lee's so metal.
Well, he's crazy. Like he was in, didn't he serve in World War II?
I'm pretty sure he did. He also, speaking of Christopher Lee being metal, I think he just had like a metal band.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
He looks
this guy is so sick.
That guy was awesome.
Peter Jackson gave one of the rings used in the movies to Elijah Wood and Andy Serkis as a gift when the shoot was finished. They both thought they had the only one. That's kind of a Sauron kind of move. Actually creating a second one they don't know about.
Was Andy Serkis in this movie? Because I know Gollum's in this movie for briefly, but was that actually Andy Serkis?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good to know. Because I could have easily seen them like casting him after, but having just that be like a CGI creature. But I guess they shot these in sequence, didn't they? They shot them like back to back to back?
Actually, so they shot this one on its own, and then they shot the next two at the same time.
That makes
over
sense.
16 months.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
They should have done that for Dune. No, back to Dune, they should have done that for Dune, because it would have only made it easier to get both movies out, but they wanted to test it out to see if people would actually respond.
Well, do we know that they didn't do it? Because they
didn't do. They filmed the first one and then they had to put it out. Didn't he wanted to do it back to back?
Yeah.
Because they obviously knew they were going to do two movies, at least for the first book. And then the studio didn't want it because it was kind of an untested franchise at that point. And the original Dune movie from David Lynch wasn't that big of a hit.
No, it wasn't.
And so there was the, you know, the strong Dune fan base from the books, but they've never really had a piece of visual media that's been so well received. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of an untested franchise in that regard. Obviously well tested now. They also got a TV show on the way, which is very exciting.
Ooh.
Sorry, back off.
Oh, no, that's okay.
To Lord of the Rings.
We've now intimately intertwined the two. I think that's beautiful. During filming, most of the members of the Fellowship took up surfing in New Zealand in their spare time. Amongst them was Viggo Mortensen, who wiped out terribly one day and bruised an entire side of his face. The next day, makeup artists tried to mask the bruising and swelling, but were unsuccessful. So, Peter Jackson opted to film Mortensen from one side for the entire scene. In the Mines of Moria, when they find the tomb, Aragorn is only seen from one side in the entire sequence. Which is crazy, because it's an action scene. That must have made Jackson very upset when, like, probably a lot of choreography had gone into that. And they're like, well, we're doing it again because we can only show his right side or something like that. The cast often had to fly to remote shoot locations by helicopter. Sean Bean was afraid of flying and would only do it when absolutely necessary. When they're shooting the scenes of the Fellowship crossing the snowy mountains, he'd spend 2 hours every morning climbing from the base of the mountain to the set at the top, already dressed as Boromir. The crew being flown up could see him from their helicopters.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's kind of metal to like walk up a mountain for 2 hours.
That's also Boromir shit.
Yeah. So. But also, wow, like that must have been such a pain on the production.
Despite playing, I already said that one, so I'm going to skip it. Viggo Mortensen purchased Arwen's horse after production and gave it to Liv Tyler's riding double, Jane Abbott.
Hmm.
Also, I read Horace's house the first time, and that was very confusing. More Viggo Mortensen shit. He is trilingual in English, Spanish, and Danish, and requested the script to be revised to let Aragorn speak more of his lines in Elvish.
Cool.
So he got the linguistic chops for that.
Yeah. Elvish does sound like such a cool language.
Yeah.
Which I know they had to like build a whole language. Or was that already in the books?
So it was already partially created by Tolkien, but it wasn't a complete language.
Yeah.
And they only had a couple audio recordings to work off of. Like, so they'd hear a couple sentences, I would say, and then try and transpose that to the rest.
Right.
So it was actually a really interesting linguistic process of having there be Elvish in the movies.
Yeah. Crazy. And now it's like an actual functioning language that people can learn, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Speaking of Viggo Mortensen, he did his own stunts. He also insisted on using the only real sword in the movie, and it was completely made of steel instead of significantly lighter aluminum or rubber, which were manufactured for battle scenes and stunts. He also carried around the sword offset and had to be spoken to by police more than once because it's fucked up. So you're in New Zealand. You shouldn't just have a sword.
That's so great.
And lastly, when Orlando Bloom tied the fans who love a good Orlando Bloom fact, he landed the role of Legolas 2 days before he finished drama school.
Wow.
He was still good learning the craft, yet a master of it.
Hmm. That's really cool. And then Pirates would be next year. So that was quite a
weird trajectory.
Early 2000s, so hot for Orlando Bloom.
Oh, so hot for him.
Yeah.
I imagine he probably did other acting credits, but to like not a, like basically a fresh graduate landing a massive movie series.
Yeah.
And he was great in it.
He was. Yeah, yeah, he's really good. I like him a lot. He's so perfect as Legolas. Like, I couldn't imagine Legolas as somebody else.
No. Well, Kyle, is there anything else that you'd like to say about Lord of the Rings Fellowship of the Ring?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think I'm just ready to watch the Twin Towers now.
Yeah.
Or is it Two Towers?
It's Two Towers. Fuck me.
2001 thinking about the Twin Towers.
It's a pre-2001 movie. You got to watch for that.
Fuck. Yeah. What about you?
I'm going to say one last time. It's a good goddamn movie.
It's a good
tip. Yeah, it's all I got left in the tank. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people have watched this, but if you're one of those people that have been like, I haven't seen Lord of the Rings, get on
just
that shit.
Watch it.
Literally. Yeah. I hate people that are like proud about like how they haven't seen a major series or something.
Yeah, counterculture is not cool.
Yeah. I mean, you haven't seen the latest Marvel movies, but it's not like you were like, I don't watch Marvel movies.
No,
like,
I'm just bored of them.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of them. Yeah. I just like my attention span's drifted away, but I'm not going to knock someone for watching them.
Exactly.
It's the same thing. And this is a bone that I've had to pick on behalf of Nickelback for a while.
Right.
When you just kind of, you're ragging on something because other people like it.
Yeah.
You're not anymore an independent thinker.
Mm.
So shut up and watch the movies like we told you to.
All right, well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 3, episode 15 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We love to hear your guys' thoughts on Fellowship of the Ring or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobias on Twitter and Jason's at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
Once that first bullet goes past your head, politics go right out the window.
Hey, baby, it's me. You there? Pick up if you're there.
I love you, baby.
RPG!
Hold on! 6-4's gone down!
That's right. Next time we're talking about Ridley Scott's Black Hawk Down. So make sure to watch it before next episode. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.